So to clarify, you think there was Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater and then Metal Gear Solid 4 Snake Eaters?
Makes sense. Is it not?
Alien?
Why not have two?
Aliens?
That's exactly. Not how it works. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Press Start Podcast, Press Start Australia's weekly video game discussion podcast. I'm your host, James, and today I'm joined by my fellow gamers and co-hosts, Brody.
Hello.
And Shannon.
We have arrived. Hello.
Absolutely.
The We're train is in the station.
Another week against all odds. Yes. So on today's episode, we're going to be talking about a few reviews and previews, actually. Hollow Knight finally having a release date, and Forza Horizon 6 potentially being set in a country. Which country is that? You'll have to listen to find out. But as is tradition, let's begin by reacting to some unpopular opinions from our community.
A fortnight-long tradition.
Yes, it is. It will continue. Don't you worry.
Favorite of the show. A staple of the show, if you will.
I agree.
Move over Tech was, Time with Shannon. In comes unpopular opinions.
I feel like we've had more unpopular opinions.
Out of the show.
No, it hasn't. There's just, what are you going to talk about? When you have some good tech, we'll bring it back up. It's a seasonal show, put it that way.
Xbox's handheld that was just got a release date last week might be one, but
that's
on
date.
With the show.
We don't need tech specialty to talk about a date. But anyway. This one was sent in by Lachlan Robertson, who I see everywhere on the socials.
He is everywhere.
Hello. If you're here, is he here? That's the big question. I guess we'll find out. This one is a little bit... Anyway. From Software Games would be infinitely better if they had difficulty options instead of being stupidly difficult. How do we feel?
Better is a relative term. Like, I mean, they'd probably still be good. Like, I remember... To compare it to maybe Sifu, I remember I enjoyed Sifu far more when I was able to actually finish it. And I could do that once they, you know, added some modifiers and softened the difficulty a little bit. Like, as I'll be the first to admit, I'm not a real gamer. I can't play FromSoft games. They're too hard for me. But I've always been fascinated by the worlds. Like, I think Bloodborne's world looks very interesting. Elden Ring in particular. Like, as a story guy, I'd really like to dig into that world building and sort of get into that, but unfortunately I just can't because I can't press past the difficulty and the beating my head against the same wall over and over again. So I think that's a good take. Maybe not to the extreme of, like, you know, having a story mode or something like that, but at least something to scale the enemy difficulty down slightly or something like that, or your damage up or something, just to sliders or something like that. I don't know what I'm trying to say, but I think it's a good take on the whole.
I don't know if this is, like, an unpopular gaming opinion personally. Like, I feel like with the discussion about difficulty in FromSoft games especially has been prevalent for a long time. My opinion on them is I don't know how to say this without sounding like a dickhead, but I am naturally good at games. Like, I feel like I tend to...
Except
Mario Kart, and I think I played Arms with Shannon and he clocked me. Absolutely mogged me in Arms, but, like, I don't know if that's...
So when,
like,
no one's watching, then...
Yeah, no. But, like, I think a huge part of those games is that kind of... what's the word? That feeling of, like...
Accomplishment.
You've overcome this, like, incredible challenge.
But conversely, like, someone who's not as good at the game would still feel that.
Would they, though? Because
If someone finds it hard anyway, and they still scrape through if it's on easy difficulty because they're not that good, they're still going to feel like they've achieved something.
I'd like to clarify. I don't feel strongly either way. Like, I don't really care. It doesn't, like, affect my sleep schedule if there's an easy mode.
It's giving elitism, I have to say.
No, but, well, you know,
nah,
whatever.
I'm joking.
It generally doesn't, like, affect me, and, like, I don't care. Like, say, Another Crab's Treasure, I played that properly, but people could go through that with the gun and just one-shot everything. And, like,
it wasn't, for me, it's just not the gun. Like, that was the easy way, but just the way you could set things to, like, I can't remember what the currency was, but, like,
you could adjust.
Yeah, like, you could keep your souls or whatever, like, when you died each time, so at least you could still feel a sense of progression or things like that. Like, it wasn't just the gun, which obviously was, like, a one-shot kill for everything. Like, there were different options that at least made you feel like you wouldn't just be dying over and over again. I do agree with you, James. Though, like, there is like a sense of accomplishment that you get from those games. Like, not for me personally, but at the same time, I think they should at least try and make it accommodating. Because, like, Elden Ring is, like, one of the best games of all time, right? And, like, an amazing open world that a lot of people just wouldn't get to experience just by the nature of what it is. So I don't think it could hurt. And it wouldn't harm the experience, I don't think. Like, if you don't want to ever change anything, like, don't change anything. But it doesn't hurt anyone by doing so.
I think like, these days as well, with patches and stuff, like, a good example with Elden Ring is I beat Millennia, like, without the patch, and since then they've made her easier. And, like, I do feel, like, a little bit jibbed there because I put in so many hours there, but it's also, like, who cares? Like, I feel like they can make any game easier post-game at any point, right? But, yeah, like, I don't think the games would be better per se. Like, I don't think it changes anything. I think, sure, they might sell more. But we say that, like, Elden Ring sold 30 million copies, yeah, right? Like, yeah. I feel like you don't achieve those numbers, like, if it's just the hardcore, right?
I don't think, like, it's that. I assume a lot of people just buy it and then never finish it or, like, make it a few hours in. Yeah, which has been my experience with a lot of those games, right? Like, Sekiro, Elden Ring. Like, you get to a point where obviously there's, like, a steep curve and you're either going to be in it for the long haul or you're going to know it's not for you.
Yeah.
And I assume a lot of people have that experience with those games.
I do. I agree with the... Like, I remember when these games first kind of started popping up and I had been put off them because people were like, they were so hard. And I was like, but all the art and the characters and the enemies and shit look cool, so I really just want to experience that in some way. But then, I think, like, maybe having some kind of mode that makes it easier for people to get through it is where it's at.
Have they ever commented on this? Like, have FromSoft ever spoken about it?
I don't know. I haven't done enough research to know about what they've said.
Okay.
I think it's like, the thing is like, their games are still selling really well. I don't think they need to kind of adjust.
Yeah, true.
Really, like, I if that's their mentality about it all, right? And I feel like these games, especially like Elden Ring, they have summons, so you can summon shit. That makes the game slightly easier for you. There's ways you can kind of get around certain bits, like changing your build and stuff. Sekiro is the opposite, I think, where, like, that game, you have one character and that's your character. Like, you can't really change a lot there, so it does feel a bit more difficult. But, I half agree with this overall.
Yeah. I mean, it's not unpopular or popular. I think it's just, like, the more things we can do that everyone can enjoy games, the better, really.
Yes.
Lovely.
Okay, last one. Last unpopular opinion from Jake Sully. I think, is that the guy from Avatar?
Yeah. Like,
Jake Sully.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't. Maybe I'm wrong.
Off the battlefield with the Na'vi.
Absolutely. Took his time in to drop an unpopular opinion, though. Here we go. I got caught up in the hype for the Switch 2, but once the rose-colored glasses came off... It's been 2 months. I don't know about rose-colored glasses. I realized it's an average upgrade at best, and it already feels obsolete. Now, this is interesting, isn't it? I think there's, like, a lot to unpack here.
There is a lot to unpack. I agree with the half. I think, James, you and I have spoken at length about how it does kind of feel like there's been a lull since Donkey Kong. Like, if you didn't pick up Mario Party or Kirby... today, if you'd played those games, like, there hasn't been a lot. And obviously Kirby's coming in December, but again, it's another racing game, and Metroid we don't know about. And if you're not a Pokemon fan, there's really not a lot of Switch 2 games, like, coming up. I do agree with that. It does kind of feel like it's come out and then, like, yeah, it's mine has just been sort of sitting there. But the second part I sort of half agree with. Like, I can see how it feels like it's a little bit obsolete tech-wise with some of the other handhelds, but I think for its price and what it does and, like, just how it can run games like Cyberpunk, like, I don't think it feels obsolete. I just don't think we're seeing the games, and there's been lots of reports of, like, dev kits not being available, so I just don't think it's hitting its strides, which is, like, a valid criticism of it, but I don't think it feels obsolete to me yet.
I think you compare it to Switch 1. I don't know if I'm being revisionist here, but I do feel like it feels a lot slower. Like, I think the future looks less bright. Like, I'm sure there's shit coming, right? But, like, I don't feel like Nintendo's done a really good job of, like, highlighting that.
Yeah, yeah.
But then I do think maybe it's hard to remember this in Australia, but there are stock issues everywhere else in the world at the moment. So I think maybe Nintendo doesn't want to get too much shit out there when you can't even get the consoles yet. Like, I don't know if that's something
that is 100% factoring in. Like, the Switch One, like, that was all or nothing for them, right, after the Wii U. Like, so they had to come out swinging constantly, where, like, the Switch 2, like, it's selling out. So, like, they know they can just drip feed this stuff. And I think we'll get some cool Mario 40th anniversary stuff. And I'm really hoping, although you can never be too sure with Nintendo, that they've got a really solid, like, few years plan. Because we know that they are the one company that just have stuff ready to go, like, for a rainy month.
Lots of rain.
Yep.
Right. Oh my god, it wasn't that funny.
It was. What? When I said, I was like, that doesn't make sense. Yeah, no, for a dry month, maybe. Yeah.
For a rainy day, is that what you meant? Like,
yeah, but across the month.
Oh, okay. Well,
is it rainy or is it dry? We don't know.
A rainy day.
Yeah, exactly.
I think this conversation always pops up, I feel, at the beginning of any kind of new console launch. I think it is more salient because Nintendo is so typically, like, put out a game almost every month. And to be fair, they kind of have, like, yes, there's some ports and stuff. But, yeah, like, I don't know. My recommendation to Jake is just keep at it, buddy. Like,
just throw it
stuff
in the bin
coming.
And move on with your life.
Yeah, if you trade it in and buy Roblox credit with it or something. But like,
I do think that, like, we expected more, like, from third party and stuff. Like, all the stuff we thought would be coming in terms of Xbox games, there's just been nothing. And the two directs that we've had have been total flops, to be really honest.
I don't want to say they're flops, but they're definitely
they've been,
like,
flops. In terms of, like, selling the future of the console. Like,
they've
been flops.
I'll give you that. Yeah, they just need to get dev kits. Like, I saw an article today that Nintendo's, like, telling people, like, make your game for Switch 1 instead. Like,
but,
rather than
I don't get that.
2.
Is it that they didn't want stuff to leak? Because I feel like they didn't accomplish that anyway. So I don't really understand that point.
I don't know. I just think they need to sort it, fix it, get some shit out.
Yeah, but I have faith. I really think it's just they know that they're selling.
Too.
So, like, why have stuff coming out constantly when you can just scatter it across, like, the holiday period, and then when they're on shelves, then, like, go really hard with new stuff.
What do you think, Brody?
I tend to agree in that the cadence of release has been quite underwhelming, I suppose. But I think we forget, I suppose, that the Switch built its empire on ports. So I think it's bound to be slow going at the start. As you say, you got the stock issues, but I don't think it's been that bad. Like, I think the spread's pretty good. And at the end of the year, we've still got possibly this Hyrule Warriors game coming, Kirby, Metroid, so Pokemon. Mm. No slate is going to please everyone across the board. So I still think it's a reasonable cadence, especially when you compare it to, say, the Xbox Series launch or even the PS5. I thought, like, beyond their immediate launch windows, they both had slow starts as well. So, no, I don't think it's doom and gloom. I would maybe agree with, like, the obsolete part, like, to a degree, in terms of I really don't... I'm concerned now about the third-party support. Like, with Cyberpunk, I thought it was a very bright future and, you know, everything was going to be coming at a rate of knots and be performing really well, but these reports of, like, Elden Ring performing really poorly on it in handheld, like, that's a concern, I think. So, I'm
that
a little bit
must
concerned.
Be individual developer.
Well, obviously, it's down to individual
though,
optimization,
right?
Like, but I mean,
because, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's still a concern, I think. I mean, if FromSoft can't get Elden Ring running well on it, then what's fucking Dust Blood's going to be like? So, I don't know. I'm a little bit concerned from that perspective, but on the whole, I think it's still off to a good start. I mean, Donkey Kong is a Game of the Year contender, so it can't be all that bad.
Yeah, and to me, like, having Donkey Kong, what, like, 2 or 3 months within launch, like, is just incredible for how good that game is, right? And, like, it just shows you how the Switch can, run games that any other platform could, I think. But, yeah, totally get the point. I don't think it's too unpopular.
I understand the feeling, but I don't agree. I think long term there'll be, it's just many a tree but no fruit just yet, because of all the rainy days.
Agree.
So,
What did we review this week, James?
Oh, thanks, Shannon, for that segue. So I reviewed two things. Brody previewed something, and then I don't know what's called what you did with the Mario app, but like we'll talk about that towards the end. The big one, maybe controversial, I don't know. Metal Gear Solid Delta Snake Eater was probably my biggest review to go up this week. A very, very faithful remake of the original Metal Gear Solid 3. I liked it. I think it was really good. You can't deny that the game underneath it is really, really good. But I don't feel that... I feel like slapping really good graphics over the top of a PS2 game, which is kind of what they've done. I'm sure that's not literally what they've done, but it feels that way. There's like a real disconnect, I think, between like the really high fidelity graphics and the like at the way the whole game kind of flows and plays now. Yeah. So I landed on a 7.5, which I think is like a death sentence for people these days with scores, but I still think that's a good score. Like it's above.
Is the game five. As someone who has never played this and kind of only interest to date has been the Ape Escape part of it. Like, is the game itself still a 10? Like, is the game a 10 if you take away the little weirdness around the remake?
Someone asked me this today and I said, like, if this was the first time I played this game this way, like, it probably is a 9 or 9.5, I reckon. But I just don't feel like I can completely divorce my opinion on the original game from what this is, you know. Like, I feel like with a lot of remakes and remasters and such, a lot of them try to do something a little bit different, or like try and, I guess, I don't want to say something, but like just there would be clear changes to kind of like change the flow or like do something like that. But this is one to one, shot for shot, the same game as the PS2 game.
That wasn't the issue for you, really, was it? It was like that coupled with the fact that it ran poorly and had visual issues and stuff, right?
Yeah, I just think when the only new thing you're bringing to the table is your visuals, right? And with that, you kind of expect it to perform really well. And on the Pro, it doesn't perform that well.
Yeah, so which is weird, right? Because you would think, given it's, it's surprising. But
the pro version doesn't actually let you pick, say, between performance and fidelity, whereas on Xbox it does. I don't know about base PS5, but apparently it does as well. There's an option for you can pick either. So this is trying to do both, like in terms of like full 4K and 60 frames, but it just chugs a lot in cutscenes and during gameplay, especially at the beginning. Towards the end it gets better. And I don't care about that stuff usually, but I feel like that's the only thing they're bringing to this package, like, is the new visuals and such, and that doesn't even perfectly kind of come together, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so most people wouldn't balk at a nicer looking game, but do you think in this instance it sort of detracts from the original intent of the visuals on the PS2? Like, do you feel like it moves the artistic intention?
I don't think I would go, I wouldn't, like, honestly, I wouldn't go that far. Like, I think that's a bit dramatic to say, but it definitely feels different. Like, the lighting, the changes in the lighting and there's a filter that kind of tries to make it look like the old games, but it's just a filter at the end of the day. It can't really stand in for, you know, baked in lighting and such. I don't think it's like, it's one of those things where I think of people like Ewan, for example, who, like, started playing Metal Gear Solid 2, and was like, oh, it just feels really, like, old and dated. And I personally, as somebody who, like, grew up on those games and still have, you know, played it, like, 2 to 3 years ago, I can't see that. Like, I've played these games. I've grown up with these games. I can't feel that. Whereas I think with this game, with Delta, if you're playing Metal Gear Solid 3 for the first time, I think this is a much more frictionless way to get into it. Because it's got that kind, all the hallmarks of, like, modern game design, like autosaves and over-the-shoulder free aiming, and there's this tip box that pops up now. Where back in the day, like, if you were stuck in jail in this game, like you had to kind of work out how to get out, right? Like, you didn't have the internet or your phone to just look shit up, and now, like, a box will pop up, which you can turn off if you're, like, a purist, that will say, like, suggestions on what you can do and stuff. So there's like a tips kind of system that kind of walks you through the whole game if you are stuck. So there's like a whole mix of things I think that makes it feel like a game released today, which is good in some ways, but like I feel like it definitely kind of undermines the beauty in MGS3, I think, is it's such a systems rich game and there's so many different things you can do and you kind of work out how to do all that shit yourself. But when it's just spelt out to you by the game, I feel like that takes away from it a bit.
Fair enough. I've heard a few people talking about the fact that things like over-the-shoulder aiming are in and it made the game a little bit easy for them. Do you think that's true? Like, was it easier than the original?
Yes, 100%, definitely. I got through this on Foxhound rank, like, in about a day. Normally, that would take me, like, a week. Right. Just in terms of the requirements and the aiming and stuff. I will say they've added bullet drop to this, which I think is a weird, like all the changes they make to this game are like weird, but I think that maybe is some way to try to compensate for how much easier the game is. Cause the game did still have free aiming originally, but like, I think with the way the camera works in this game, it is a lot more easier to kind of spot enemies and such. But bullet drop was a bit jarring to get used to because MGS obviously never had that kind of thing. I feel for Konami. Like, I feel like you can't really change this too much, right? Like, it's like the Kojima cult is like very strong and you don't want to change too much about what I think is probably one of his best games. But at the same time, it's like, if you're going to remake something, like, what's the point if all you're going to do is kind of just like, you know, change the controls and make it look like an Unreal Engine 5 game. Like a tech demo.
If someone were playing this for the first time, would you recommend this?
Yes.
Because you can get 3 on PS5, right? Like in the collection.
You can, like as part of the Master Collection, like 2 years ago, which I think is a bit weird. Yeah. But I think like if you're like somebody who... I forget as well, like people who played Metal Gear Solid 5 are 10 years older now. So like the people who were 10 when the 5 came out are probably 20 now and they can probably get into Metal Gear. And Delta is like a really good starting off point, both narratively and mechanically.
Yeah.
And then that leads nicely into 5.
I can't find it now, but I swear they did tweet that they were aware of, like, obviously they're aware of the visual issues and going to fix them, which I think they will.
I think that's fine, but I also feel like this game was meant to come out like end of last year, right? Like, yeah, and then it got dated for August, and it's like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Game development is hard.
You would have been aware before of this. It's not like a server issue or something.
No, it's like 100% just like a optimization kind of issue. But yeah, I like to in brief. Like, I think if you have never played Metal Gear 3 before, this is a fine way to play it. You won't notice the changes enough. Well, you won't notice the changes because you don't know. But if you're like someone who's really into MGS3, I don't think this game adds anything to the experience that's worth experiencing straight away. I guess I'm trying to say wait for a sale. If you're somebody who's really into MGS3 or who's played it heaps and wants to see what it's about. It's not like, say, like Resi 2, like where those two games are very different, you know? They're very, very different stories. Very different interpretations of the same story. This is literally like one for one, the same game.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Konami's doing a lot of weird stuff at the moment, and this is kind of... It's weird how many like pre-launch events this was at, and then it kind of just feels like they just shoved it out without anything, to be honest.
Yeah, it's kind of weird too. I wonder where they go from here. Like, I think about Silent Hill. Like, I feel like they had a lot more room there to move in terms of they've got a remake. There's an original game coming out end of September. And there's no, like, you know, weird bad blood between the creators of that game, if that makes sense. So I can't see them. Like, do they just keep remaking new Metal Gears? Or, like, do they make a brand new Metal Gear? Like,
yes.
Food for thought.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
Yeah. Speaking of interesting, not really. I also played the Kirby expansion and Forgotten Land because I actually had never played this game before. I've didn't realize until I booted it, and I thought my save data didn't transfer, but it turns out I just had never played it, so it wasn't really that was a me issue. I played the whole thing through on Switch 2. So the main visual upgrade is that it's 60 frames now. There's a resolution bump. I can't say by how much. I'm not too tech savvy enough to work that out. And then I got to play the Star-Crossed World expansion, obviously, which unlocks gradually as you play the game, which I think is a really cool way to do it. So it's all integrated. It's not like Jamboree where it was all relegated to like separate modes and shit. Like I feel like it's all just like one big package now, which is really cool. So yeah, I think if anyone, I feel like maybe, because I think we've talked about at length how this is a bit of a weird one to, I guess, put the remaster effort into, or like to put the upgrade effort into in such a way. But I do think this is probably the game that I feel like a lot of people might have skipped during the Switch. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, it was at the stage where I think, a lot of people were sort of just waiting for the Switch 2 and potentially just waiting to play these types of games. I reviewed it. I don't remember it looking or running too poorly, but I feel like by that point we had just accepted how games on the Switch looked, right? So I'm keen to go back to it because it was like a beautiful game in terms of like Nintendo games. Like it was a good looking game that you could tell would benefit from like an enhanced resolution and 60 FPS. So I'm keen to go back to it.
I think it's the best way to play it, absolutely. The Star-Crossed World expansion is good. It adds 12 new levels. The base game has, I think, 36 to 40 from memory. So they are all visually quite stunning. If not a bit samey. Like I feel like the starry, blue starry, crystally kind of vibe to them is a little bit samey. But overall, it is something I don't feel could run on the Switch 1 without chugging really dramatically.
Okay, like, so there's a noticeable difference as someone who played them kind of in sequence between the base levels and these ones.
Because the way that it works is like you pick, say, each starry level is like attached to an existing level. So when you go through the starry version of that level, it'll like get corrupted or whatever.
It's like a remix almost.
Crystals in some way. So So like in a level where you would normally swim across the top of the ocean and then run across a beach, now like the star like crashes into the ocean, like splits it, and then that whole level is then played through the seabed of that level. So it's new, but like it's a twist on, you know, like the level you've already played, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So they've picked some pretty clever levels to remix in that way. Like it does feel like DLC because a lot of the enemies are just like crystallized versions of enemies that you've already had in the game.
Your favorite Kirby game? Are you a Kirby fan at heart?
I'm not enough to the point where I could probably talk about my favorite Kirby games
just yet. This stands above for me.
I think it's better than most of the like Star Allies that return to Dreamland.
I really like the 3DS one. It wasn't Epic Yarn, was it? Was it Epic Yarn?
Epic Yarn was Wii U. I think Triple Deluxe there's Triple Deluxe and Robo Planet Robobot.
The one that had the yarn I really enjoyed, but I don't know if that was like traditional Kirby game, but that was a good time.
Yeah, that was like close to Yoshi, right? It was like a Yoshi game almost. I think this is really good. I really enjoyed it. I'm like kind of annoyed that I slept on it for so long, but I genuinely enjoyed it. I finished it in like 3 days, like nonstop. I just kept playing. So yeah, really good game. If you haven't played it, it's a really good way to play it. If you're coming back for Star-Crossed World, it is good, but I would maybe just temper your expectations a bit. It's not a lot new here. It is a lot of remixed stuff. It doesn't feel cheap or anything, but it's not like a whole new world to explore. It's just like kind of remixed levels from the base game already. But it does have an epic final boss. I think it's one of the best final bosses in the Kirby games. Gets pretty tough.
Yeah, I think if you didn't play it on Switch 1, like, definitely pick it up. Because, speaking to a few friends, they'd never played a Kirby game. And I do think this is one that does. It's still, it was very easy from memory. I don't know if these new levels are any harder or provide more of a challenge. It is, like, Nintendo-y in that way. But I think if you're someone that enjoys, like, 2D Mario games, like, definitely pick this up for sure.
It's a good bridge.
Is a lot of money.
But that's what they all are now.
That's what games cost now, I know. But it just,
I guess it's tough when it's like the base game was $80. So like for $30 more, you're getting 12 more levels and a visual upgrade. Mm. But like, realistically, people would have paid
the Switch
69.
One version. Unless it works out cheaper for whatever reason.
Yeah. Mm. Speaking of cheap, but not really, Brody has previewed The Outer Worlds 2 for us on the site. You can go and read his full penetrating insights on the website right now. But since he's here and we want to give him something to say, Brody, tell us what you thought of your time with The Outer Worlds 2.
Yep, so it's a bit of an interesting preview, this one, mainly because what we got to play was such a very small sample of the game. So literally it was the opening mission of the game, which is the prologue, obviously. It's about a 15-minute mission, and on face value, that's a very short preview, but it's quite clever in the sense that with a game with this kind of variety and character choice, it gave me the opportunity to go through three or four times and try a lot of different paths. I'm not a guy who really got through The Outer Worlds 1. Like, I started it, I enjoyed it, it felt like New Vegas in space, that sort of thing, and I sort of moved on. I just didn't finish it, life got in the way, but I like that they're setting this one up to be its own thing. Like, you don't need that prerequisite knowledge. Like, it's a new story set in a different part of the universe and all that sort of stuff. You play a member of the Earth Directorate, and you're basically tasked with investigating skip drive technology at this different place called Arcadia, because you think that technology is being tied to, like, rifts in space that, you know, threaten to destroy the world and all that sort of stuff. So the mission I played was set up like an espionage sort of level where you, like, slip in and out and you're trying to gather intel that basically proves that. And obviously, as things always happen with spy movies, shit goes pear-shaped, and yeah, it's a quite explosive fun time from there. But I guess the things that are most interesting are the ways that the level can play out differently, just due to, like, choices and I guess character builds that you can have. Like, so, like with all these RPGs now, like, you choose a background, which, you know, you can either be like an ex-convict, you can be a lawbringer, you can be a professor who's, like, more studious in that sense, or you could be a roustabout who's just kind of, like, aimless and just goes from place to place and just falls into whatever. So those things obviously serve in dialogue trees to give you, like, opportunities to say things that you wouldn't otherwise. They can open up different little conversational opportunities. So that's fun, but pretty standard fare. If anyone who watched, like, the Xbox Direct for this, like, most people came away from that finding the trait system to be the cool thing, like, where you'd get positive traits, but then also in partnership with that, you'd get, like, negative traits. I think that's also very cool here. Like, the positive traits that I picked up were things like engineering and, I guess, being able to talk to people and convince people of things and stuff like that. And so I use those in cool ways in the level. Like, there is a character named Corbin who you can basically dupe in any number of ways, because he's, like, the security guard at the place. And, you know, if you're good at engineering, you can, like, hack the station's automatons and all, like, their mech defense, which means if you say go to this station and you provoke him into, like, releasing the mechs, they'll then fight for you. You can obviously convince him otherwise to take your side and all that sort of stuff. And I don't know, I just found it, there was a lot of fun had, like, replaying this level and seeing all the different ways that it could play out. So more than anything else, like, this preview has made me excited for the possibility of replaying this, because Obsidian obviously make quite truncated experiences and shorter experiences than, say, Starfield, which is full of a lot of fluff and filler, I'd say, compared to something like this. So the fact that I could get through this campaign in 8 to 10 hours or whatever it is and, you know, play it again any number of ways, like, I think that's an exciting prospect for anyone who likes role-playing. So the game obviously looks a hell of a lot better than the first game. Like, I remember the first game looking dated when it came out, similar to, you know, Starfield, how it looked dated when it came out, but this one looks a whole lot better. Like, it's really pretty. It actually reminded me quite a bit of, like, Bioshock. Like, it's got that future tech art deco sort of look. And the gunplay is, like, really tight, which is surprising, because I remember it being, again, similar to, like, their Fallout effort, which Fallout always had quite clunky gunplay, I felt, but it's really smooth and quite enjoyable here and a very viable way to play. So yeah, like, on the whole, it was a very small vertical slice that I obviously sampled a handful of times, but I came away thinking that this could be yeah, I think what I said at the end is it feels like Starfield without the fluff. Like it's a nice grand sci-fi adventure that puts player choice first and pays it off in interesting ways, I think. So
the only question I have about this was I feel like the first game, the quest design in terms of the choices that you have were very much like side with these people or these people, and that's kind of it. Did you get a sense that that has changed, like has kind of evolved in any way?
No, like, again, it was a very small slice, so you don't really get any sense of how the factions will work. Like, I know they obviously play a factor because some of the traits are tied to how much you can curry favor with them and stuff. Like, if you're... If one of your negative traits is that you're just downright repulsive and no one wants to spend any time with you, then you're going to have a hard time getting on the good side of these factions. But in terms of, how the mission branches to either go to one or the other, I didn't get a sense of that from this. There is interesting, there is interesting story branching within the mission that I played in that, halfway through the level, you could go of one of two paths, basically, and both had pretty significant but different outcomes for some of the NPCs. So in that sense, I think there's a bit of fun there, but no, I couldn't get a sense for the factions, unfortunately.
I was just going to say, I really liked the first game. I feel like a lot of people were down on it after a while. Like, I think it didn't have a lot of, staying power and mentally for a lot of people. But I liked how kind of focused it felt, and I thought the humor was, all right, although I don't know how I would feel about it 6 years on, because it has been that long, so.
Mm.
But yeah.
I think, we've obviously spoken a few times about the price, and I know you did say it was a vertical slice, but does it feel like the $125 game or $130 game that it was going to be?
I don't know. It's hard to say. Like, again, when it comes to Game Pass, that's hard to quantify. I don't know. It is hard to tell. If the full game capitalizes on, I think, what they put forward in this preview, I think it could be a very good RPG that would really speak to people who like these sort of games. Whether it's $130 good, I don't know. I'd find it hard to justify any game for $130, quite frankly.
But if you want something free and want to take a quick digital trip to Japan, you can download the Hello Mario app on your Nintendo Switch right now, which is exciting. Shannon did just that, and now he's going to tell us all about what Hello, Mario is.
Yeah, hate the name, hate a comma in a name of anything.
To be clear, it's Hello, Mario with an exclamation mark.
It is, yeah. for those that played the Super Mario 64, it's a take on, I think it was what came on every time you turned it on, right? Before you press start. It was like the intro screen. Where you could
the
pull
title
it.
Screen.
Title screen.
Yeah. You could pull up Mario's face, and I think because it was he's foreign to 3D.
Mario Party minigame as well, I think.
Yeah, and the Donkey Kong sculpting thing also reminded me a little bit of it. Anyway,
lots of this facial manipulation.
Yeah. This is a take on that. It's an interactive version of Mario's face, but which I literally thought was all it was going to be just from the little spiel that we had before this, but it's actually you can use every single power up you can think of. Like every time you boot into the app, Mario will look different. Like obviously you can pull his hat off and there's lots of little mini games based on all the power ups. It's set on a 10-minute window and then you get the good night thing. So it's not something that people are meant to stare at for hours and hours, kids. But it's, I just think it is shocking that Nintendo have never really done anything Mario-related for kids. I know you can buy, clothes and bibs.
Wouldn't you
and,
say the games are or not?
Not toddlers. Brody's probably more equipped to talk about this. This is, he does peekaboo and stuff. It's very much for, and it's also on iPhone and iPad, I believe, as well. But, it's very much, about, sensory and hand-eye movement for younger kids. So I think it's before they go on to playing a 2D Mario. It's very much what iPad games and stuff exist already for kids at that age, I'm guessing. So it does make sense when you think of the building blocks, which are also Amiibo and all the other things that tie into this range. I think the sad thing is that the rest of the world isn't getting it until 2026, which I was like, that's a long time away for a game that's already in full English.
Is there anything? Oh, okay. So I was going to say, there's nothing in there you can see. No.
Well, no, I think they just want to, because there's physical items in this My Mario range. I think they obviously want to drop it in each region, which half makes sense. But then also, like, what if people just want this and not the building blocks, which I think a lot of people will be the case for. But anyway, I think it's cool. Like, it's not something you're going to spend hours and hours and hours playing as an adult. But I think the reason they've done it this way is because, like, people that are in their 30s are going to have nostalgia for this, obviously, and they could potentially have kids. So I think it's like tying that adult and toddler relationship together in a way that makes sense for both parties. And I think it's really cool that they're starting to do things like this. So I guess, yeah, this might be a kid's first gaming experience and not Roblox and Fortnite, which I definitely think is like a big threat to gaming in the future, because we've spoken about that, right? So I think we need to see more of this stuff. Brody, how do you feel about it? You were intrigued.
I was intrigued. I need to actually get on to, sorting out a way to download that. But, look, I'm keen to give it a go. Like, as you say, it's surprising that Nintendo haven't really catered to, to your point, younger kids, like your 3s, 4-year-olds and stuff like that. So, I think it's
because your kids enjoyed the Mario movie, didn't they? And that's, I guess, the first time they've sort of tried that.
Yeah, that was their first exposure to Mario. And Eddie's played Wonder a couple of times in like the last few months, and they played Mario Kart a little bit. So, but you know, they're shit at it. So, something like this that they could probably more easily digest, and maybe
you just triple lapping them.
No, look, I mean, they need to get good. It's embarrassing, quite frankly. Too much Paw Patrol. Too much Paw Patrol games. It's numbing their brain. But, I mean, I think something like this would be good. So I'm keen to check it out.
Yeah. No, it's a good move. I do, like, for all of the shit we give Nintendo, I think they are diversifying what they're doing a lot better with theme parks and everything else at the moment to give longevity to everything. Like, they're just resting on what they're doing currently.
Hell, goodbye,
that's all,
Mario.
That's all I have to say. I think download it when it comes out. 2026 feels like a long time away, but look forward to it, as Nintendo would say.
There's going to be a My Mario Direct, Hello Mario Direct.
Yeah, literally.
This week. 4 hours next week. I'll take it. As I was trying to transition before, goodbye, Mario. Hello, Hollow Knight, as many have said in the past. Exciting news. As soon as we went live with our episode, Team Cherry announced that Silk Song is finally coming out. It is releasing on the 4th of September, which is much sooner than thought.
A week
I think
from
60
now.
Bosses, 200 enemies or something. I don't know about that, but we can maybe talk about that. I don't know. So it sounds like it's quite big. There was no like kind of insidious reason for why it took so long. They just apparently were trying to make the game the best they could be and enjoyed developing it so much. Interestingly enough, I don't think review copies are going out to anybody. It is just going out to Kickstarter backers first.
What did we think about that, just quickly?
I mean, I don't want to get like a. I mean, I feel like we're a bit biased because we are critics, but
yeah,
I think it's like a bit shit. Like, it's not. It's not like, what's the word? I'm trying to like.
I think it's more around they can't be bothered with distribution and don't have a PR
they're a very
team
small
over
team,
what they said.
They,
to be honest,
they're a small team. They don't want to have to deal with that when they're probably already confident and know it's going to sell fucking boatloads. So
which I get.
I just think, I do think there should be some kind of, something in terms of, I don't know. Like, I know that I don't have any doubt that this game is going to be good and such, but, I feel like not letting people know how it is before it's out or they can pay for it or whatever is, like, a slippery slope in a way. And I feel like that would be a more, important conversation to be having if it weren't a team who has... I mean, they've only made one game, right? So I guess, we don't know. This could be a disaster.
I mean, this could not be a 10, right? Like, it's not a guaranteed 10.
Yeah, no, for sure. But I do wonder, what... I hope that doesn't set a precedent for anyone else. But I think...
Yeah.
No GTA 6.
I think it's cool that it's coming.
Codes.
That's exciting. Yeah, I mean that's another... I feel like that's another game where they probably don't need to... If we're going to start doing that,
Rockstar's never done that.
No,
so let's hope that isn't
I'm sure, and do. I'm sure, like, let's be real, like, I don't think Rockstar is looking to what Team Cherry are doing to make their marketing decisions when it comes to GTA 6, but, I mean, who knows? But, yeah, like, I don't know. I think it would be nice to be able to have an idea of, I mean, that's, like, part of our jobs, right? Like, I feel like.
I don't think it's just that. I think, like, as a team, like, surely you just want to see reviews dropping. Like, and I feel like it's going to be scattered and, like, people might just not bother with how long the game is now.
Yeah, and people, like, rush it and, like, to get reviews up.
So, but, it's risky, I think.
Like, I don't know if that's the best way to experience your game. But then also, like, if they gave it to everyone a month out, that would also be, that wouldn't not leak, I feel, because a lot of dickheads, like, you know.
Always
like to,
the dickheads.
Chase, well, like, whenever we get something and then all of a sudden all those details appear somewhere else, it's like, fuck off. Like,
like there chases. Is something special and everyone just experiencing it at once.
Yeah. And I guess a game like that, where it is a lot of exploration and not as guided, like, I think there is probably something to that. And like not having 77 guides go up, like, as soon as embargo hits, or like, Hollow Knight, full movie, YouTube, and it's like, you know, 20 hours. You know how that happens with every game now? Like, people just put up the whole fucking game. Awful. Anyway. Exciting times, though. I'm keen to play it whenever I have a spare moment. Not soon, but yes. Hopefully at some point next week. I still have to play the first one. That's, like, maybe controversial, but yeah.
I haven't finished it either. I played maybe an hour.
I haven't played it either.
I started on a plane, and I was like, this is the worst game to play on a plane. Like, I'm not... This isn't the vibe. So, I just gave up, and then I never went back to it. But, yeah. Speaking of things that I will never go back to, in fact, I was never there to begin with, Forza Horizon is rumoured to be releasing this year, a brand new one. I think the first one in, I want to say, 2 years, 3 years, maybe. And the big rumor is that it will be taking place in Japan. There's a lot of things leading up to this. I'm not going to recap them all because I didn't have time to find them. But basically, I think some Australian car company was taking photos of Japanese cars for a Forza game. And that leaked. Well, it didn't leak. They just put it up, not realizing that that wasn't announced yet. That shit got taken down.
It was rumored before, wasn't it? I think before this. I think so.
I think following that, a lot of people are like, they've heard it's being announced TGS, which is Tokyo Game Show, in September. Kind of makes sense.
Does make sense.
I mean, I feel like the Forza games, like when the Australian one was here, obviously, like that did really well. I think the games always seem to do really well in the locations where they're set. So this could be the big game to break them into Japan. Although, it's probably going to be coming to PS5 anyway. So, who knows? How do we feel about this? I know you two both play Forza, right? I feel like you both have played Forza semi-regularly in the past, or am I misreading that?
Yeah. No, I'm keen. I mean, it doesn't get much better than Australia for us, and the UK didn't do much for me. Mexico was cool, but I think Japan is cool. I mean, I don't know a lot about the racing scene, apart from, like, Tokyo Drift.
I was going to say, but I watched Fast and the Furious 3 at some point. Like, I feel like that's the extent of it for me. Yeah.
But I think there is a cool car scene. Like, Japan has some of the most iconic car brands have come out of Japan, right? So, like, it makes perfect sense to me. But in terms of, like, how it looks and stuff, you've probably got the best idea of what's possible there. Jumps.
I didn't go racing when I was...
No, but, like, I've only been to Tokyo. So, like, I'm assuming it'll be...
Yeah, I'm sure they could do some cool stuff. There's like, they just have to like widen the streets significantly. But I mean, they've never been one-to-one recreations, right? So yeah, I think it's a cool setting. I don't think there's, I could be wrong because I'm not into these games, but I don't think there has been a game that's like open world in this like country ever, right?
Ghostwire Tokyo.
And I feel like looking at, because it was like... Oh, well, obviously, I meant a racing game, Brody, but yes.
I'm joking, James.
I assume Gran Turismo has, like, some Japanese stuff, but it's obviously quite different to, like, street racing, right?
Yeah.
No, I'm excited. I think this is, like, one of Xbox's universally loved franchises. I can't see too much going wrong with it, although... Let's just wait. So, it's on shelves, shall we? Available to download before we comment.
I was going to say, it won't be on shelves. Maybe on PlayStation, but not on
Xbox. Was the rumor this year? I feel like that seems ambitious.
I mean, it's not unreasonable.
I'd be stunned if it's not released within 3 months, but...
Yeah. They used to be... didn't they used to be yearly? On every 2 years, I think, for Horizon?
Yeah, and then Forza was... How's Fable going? Let's talk about that, Playground. No, let's see that again. Yeah, let's talk the real talk.
I don't know. Do we even know? I don't know if Playground is doing this. Would they be?
I think so.
They kept their like core studio team.
Oh, they have two. They have two teams.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Three. Oh no, that's number of locations is three, not number of employees. So I was like, they're doing good work. If it's
team
three
Cherry.
People, 381 people. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I'm keen, and the fact that it's like 3 weeks away from announcement, I think. Yeah, do we think it'll be PS5 and, like, I don't think Switch 2, but do we think PS5 day one?
Yes.
I am not so sure. I reckon they give it a little bit of time on Xbox, maybe.
No.
We'll see.
So Reloaded. I feel like if Reloaded is... I mean, I know it's not the same, but... Like,
yeah,
I don't think
it's the same at all.
What? Oh, okay. It's... Whatever.
Yeah. I would be keen to see it come into PS5 and Switch 2 on day one and see what that does for sales. I do think they need to just drop a big game on everything to see, like, give themselves a benchmark of how things could do. Yeah, maybe that's just me being selfish because I want to.
I mean, Horizon 5, I mean, you have an Xbox, so you could play it either way. You would just not be so stubborn.
You've only got so many HDMI ports. It's a long say.
Take your Switch out there. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
No. Literally. Well, that's, yeah.
You play that handheld anyway.
Yeah.
Dog.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, let's wrap this up with a rapid-fire question. This week, they, as in the people, announced that Mortal Kombat Special Forces, which is the lowest-rated game in the franchise, has been announced to be included in the upcoming Legacy Collection. My question to you two... is which shit game do you want to see remastered and why? Like, surely there's a game, you know, is objectively shit that you want to revisit.
Like a guilty pleasure sort of game.
Yeah.
That's a tricky one.
I would want to see Bugs Bunny Lost in Time remade or remastered. I can't remember what you said, but I played a lot of that game as a kid. Anyone else?
Is that considered shit?
Well, I don't know. I mean, they've not done anything with that franchise since, so...
54%, so that's a pretty good meta.
I don't know that I have an answer. Nothing's coming to me. Cool Spot. No, I don't know.
I think...
Halo.
That's been remastered like 40 times.
Halo, that's a bit... That's a bit rough. I think the first person Resident Evil game, Survivor, they should do that. Why not?
I don't even know what that is.
Awful. It was like, the meta was 39, so that's probably gives you an idea. Yeah, that's mine. None for you, Brody. You only like good games.
Yeah, I'm a man of taste. I genuinely can't think of anything. If I think of something, I'll bring it next week.
I'm trying to think what you like.
Don't bring any baggage from this week into next week. Thanks. Yeah, well, this is the slowest rapid fire ever.
So, I thought we were moving on. I don't have an answer.
Pulling up what the wiki while
the Simpsons Hit and Run.
I was going to say, you should just say Simpsons Hit and Run.
Yeah, Digimon, I did think that, but I don't agree with it.
Okay. We can move on. Okay. Well,
Little Kitty, Big City.
Oh, Digimon World. No, that was good. We have established that.
That came to my head too.
Little Kitty, Big City. Remaster it. Bring it back. It's been too long. It's been 2 weeks. Okay, cool. Well, let's wrap this up properly now with What the Wiki. I don't have my script here, so it's Press Start's weekly video gaming game show where you guess something. I've closed my notes. The leaderboard is Ewan on 26, James on 23, Brody on 21, Shannon on 15, and Harry on 4. I think I might just delete Harry from the leaderboard. Like, what are our thoughts?
Just nuke him.
Yeah.
Poor Harry.
I'll reach out to him. Be like, hi.
I mean, he's going to hear this.
Nah, he might not. Who knows? We'll find out. If he does, reach out to me. Give me your opinion, Harry. Okay, let's go. Are we ready?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Guys. Yeah, cool. Shannon, hands off keyboard. He tapping away. Okay.
What is this? You're seeing what?
Me telling you to stop on your keyboard.
Like a big kitty.
Yeah. Okay. Here we go. This is gonna be good. Before each round, the player can customize a deck of cards used by the main characters.
Shannon.
Wow.
Yes, Shannon.
I hope you've got a deck of cards for your life. No, I don't know. I don't know.
The majority of the cards are based upon elements spanning the entire series on which this game is based on, such as weaponry, characters, and even blank itself. When the game is started, the player's hand can consist of a maximum of 6 cards. Okay, this is boring. Some cards can be equipped. Cards such as weapon cards can have other cards attached to them to improve performance. Yes, Shannon.
Is it Gwent?
It's not Gwent. This game focuses on turn-based tactics using a trading card-based system to control the main character's movement and actions. The name of the game stands for... Oh, that's going to give it away. The cards are not truly collectible as the game is complete with a single purchase. However, the game does feature deck design and deck optimization elements. The game was first unveiled at E3 in May 2004. It was a launch title for the console it was released on.
No one's ever going to get this. Can we just get it for the franchise?
The game received somewhat positive reviews from critics, citing the game's unique mechanics and turn-based stealth. The game holds a 75 on Metacritic. However, IGN gave it a 6.5, calling the game story contrived. The game was followed by a sequel, which released the following year.
I'm not even close to this.
Okay. I'll get a bit more obvious. The game is a turn-based collectible card tactical role-playing game developed by Konami Computer Entertainment Japan for the PSP. The game allows for multiplayer gameplay by wireless ad hoc connections of two PSPs. Yes, Shannon.
Metal Gear Solid Card Eater.
No, it's Brody. Not that. Sorry. Yes, Brody.
Metal Gear Solid Portable Ops.
No.
Is that a thing? I felt right. I felt good.
It is a thing. It was the second PSP game. The name stands for Active Command Intelligence Jewel.
Brody.
Yes, Brody.
The only thing I don't know is if there's a solid in the title. Metal Gear Solid Acid.
Shannon.
Shannon, what's your answer?
Metal Gear Acid.
Yeah, all right.
I have to give it to Shannon. I'm sorry. Okay. I gave the answer to both of you, and you took a punt, and it was 50-50, and you lost. I'm so sorry. It's all right. Don't worry. Okay. He's not going to get up the top leader.
There was an Uncharted card game as well, wasn't there? Or am I making it up in my head?
No, there was. Fortune Hunters or some shit.
Okay.
Okay.
Now I feel bad because I don't have a leg in this race.
Who knows?
Neither do I, really.
In this game, players get to choose which missions to play from the mission selector screen. Very groundbreaking. There are two main types of missions. Main ops, which are primary story-based missions in which goals are determined by the narrative and must be played in a strict order to proceed. Some main ops include illustrated cutscenes that involve bits of interactivity in order to proceed.
Shannon.
Yes, Shannon.
Metal Gear Solid Portable Ops.
No. Close.
Brody.
The game adopts... Yes, Brody.
Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker.
It is Peace Walker. Congratulations. How exciting.
Wow.
I wonder if there's a theme.
The crowd goes mild.
Who knows? cool. Oh, which one should I do? Okay. This game is a game in which the player plays as somebody and uses stealth, close quarters combat, and traditional combat to progress. The overhead third-person view of earlier games has been replaced by a streamlined over-the-shoulder camera for aiming a weapon with an optional first-person view at the toggle of a button.
Brody?
Shannon. The main... Ooh. Brody was first.
Metal Gear Rising Revengeance?
No.
Nah.
The main... Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater?
No. The main character has a few gadgets to aid them in battle. The Octo Camo suit mimics the appearance and texture of any surface in a similar fashion to an octopus.
Move it on. Okay.
Yeah, well, if only we could do this game first.
Like, just mock record it before we do the podcast.
Yeah.
So our minds are bright.
Oh, your brine's never bright. So when are we going to do it?
Your brine's never bright.
What, did I say that? I don't know. Yeah, right. Oh, no. Here we go.
The goose is loose. The goose is loose.
This is my new tactic to distract the competition.
The game started development due to fan demand. Series creator Hideo Kojima had previously directed the prequel, which was meant to end the series, but people were demanding to have a sequel to Metal Gear Solid 2 and clear the mysteries Kojima wanted to leave to the player's interpretation. Kojima announced that he would be retiring as a director of the Metal Gear series after Snake Eater and would leave his position open to another person for this game. As a joke, the new director was announced as Alan Smithy.
Shannon.
Yes, Shannon.
Metal Gear Solid 4.
Can I have the full title? Since you got a point for the last one for getting the right title.
I'll queue up. Brody.
It's
Metal
only
Gear
fair.
Solid 4.
Time him out.
Snake Eaters. I don't know. Why would they be...
So to clarify, you think there was Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater and then Metal Gear Solid 4 Snake Eaters.
Makes sense. Does it not?
Alien?
Why not have two?
Aliens?
That's not how it works. Yeah, okay.
Brody.
Oh!
Yes.
Metal Gear Solid 4 Guns of the Patriot.
Yes, I'll give you that.
Guns of the Patriots.
Yes, there's more than
one. It was
one.
Cut off by the leg.
Yes, well, that didn't go as well as I thought, but that's okay. So,
I'm surprised we got any of them.
I'm surprised. Portable Ops is a game. I don't know where I pulled that from.
It came before Peace Walker, but it was shit.
Wow.
Yeah, well, that ends this episode of the Press Start podcast. Exciting times. That leaves us, Ewan, on 26. Brody and James are now on 23 together. Wow. Exciting. Shannon on 16, inching back ever so slowly, but surely. And Harry on 4, if we're going to keep him. I think I might keep him. I feel bad.
We need someone to make Shannon look good.
True. Yeah. Actually, that's really good of him. He's so
nice.
It
is just great, isn't it, guys?
With that, let us bring an end to this week's episode of the Press Start podcast. Subscribe to us on Listener or the podcast service of your choice. Follow us at PressStartAU or visit the site at press-start.com.au. We've been joined today by Brody.
Thank you. You can follow me at most things at Brody_DG.
Shannon.
Yeah, you can follow me at Shannon Rixty.
I've been your host, James. You can follow me on X at JamesATJMZ or elsewhere just by Googling me, I guess. But yeah, that's it. So we'll be back next week. And until then, happy gaming.
I think Ewan will be back.
Yeah,
so
maybe.
Look forward to that.
Yeah, look, can't wait.
We are recording this.
The shows will be a lot more structured, I think, in the future, which is like more exciting. But we'll see how we go.
Into shape.
Anyway.
I've had a good time. It's been fun.
It has been. We've been here for a good time. Not a long time, really. So
It's been over an hour. It's a long time.
Anyway, we'll be back next week. But until then, happy gaming.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.